Welcome to the Defense and Aerospace Report podcast. I'm your host, Vago Maradian. Our podcast is brought to you by Bell. Since 1935, Bell has been redefining flight. Learn more about its pioneering spirit at bellflight.com. 16 days after the November 3 election, President Trump cleared his administration to begin working with President-elect Joe Biden and his team. Biden on Tuesday named the first members of his cabinet. Conspicuously absent for some from his top national security team was a candidate for defense secretary. Transition officials have said that other key cabinet posts, including defense, treasury, and attorney general, would be announced next week, and that this first batch was to mark a change from the Trump administration, focusing on diplomacy, respect for intelligence, and welcoming immigrants. Joining us today, as they do every week, are Michael Baer, the chairman of the Defense Business Board and the president of the Dumbarton Strategies Consultancy, and Arnold Panaro, former staff director of the Senate Armed Services Committee, who's now the chairman of the Panaro Group Consultancy, and he's also the chairman of the National Defense Industrial Association. Both have been intimately involved in the defense side of presidential transitions for more than four decades. Gentlemen, it's always an honor having you back on.
Good to be here.
Delighted to be here, Vago.
And before we get started, our global coverage is sponsored by Leonardo DRS. Northrop Grumman sponsors our weekly cyber report and our cyber coverage overall. Fincantieri Marinette Marine sponsors our naval coverage. General Atomics Aeronautical Systems sponsors our coverage of strategy. And Beretta USA sponsors our land warfare coverage. Michael, start us off, right? President Trump hasn't conceded yet, but fortunately has given the go-ahead to the General Services Administration to begin the transition now 17 days now after the election. What's happening now? What should the new team be focused on? And Arnold, want to get your sense on both of those as well. Go ahead, Michael.
Thank you, Vago. This ascertainment decision allows many things at DOD, at least three of which at the very highest levels are most important. It enables the landing team to have access to the building. It enables the Biden team to begin to submit and run clearances, and the contingency exercises to proceed. The Pentagon was the first to signal it would cooperate with the Biden team. And as you know, Kath Hicks reached out to them, and so it begins. At that, the landing team's luxury of thinking about what should happen ends, and the focus shifts to the Pentagon hallways, and frankly, what has happened. The Pentagon has always set aside space for transition teams to operate, and email accounts on the high and low side for information transfer, which are more important than ever right now. They'll also have a mountain of briefing books ready for review, which in our experience, that is Arnold's and mine, they're rarely valuable, as they are unlikely to have information the incoming team doesn't already know. And the Biden team can scope and schedule the statutory mandated contingency exercises with the Trump NSC staff. Those are typically run in January. The last and most important part is the clearances can also run at DCSA for the landing team and at OPM for the nominees. But when, and this is a big when, the Biden team has selected the names they intend to nominate. The rush here is not for the secretary to be cleared. At that level, the OPM clearance takes about 3 weeks or so. It really matters, however, most for those further down the chain, the unders and the assistant secretaries. Those clearances can take 6 to 8 weeks. And that's where the real implementation of a new administration's agenda occurs. So in the tsunami of nominations that will come in December, getting the DOD slate in early matters. And those nominees, once all the clearances are obtained, background, ethics, and financial, have to be worked into the SAS calendar, a process that I know Arnold and will talk about later. But those are the high-level things. But there's also an awful lot of must-do-now stuff. And Arnold, I think more than anybody else, understands that now-do list. Arnold?
The team is led by Dr. Kath Hicks. It's highly experienced. They're all Pentagon street smart. And they now will have the opportunity to deal directly with people in the Pentagon, not just the nominal heads of the transition, but the real people that do the day-to-day work, because the challenge they face is the practical realities of getting ready to run the world's largest and most complex organization 60 days from now. And so the Pentagon team at the leadership level actually have not been through a transition before, whereas most of the people on the Biden team has. And so they actually have more experience than Tom Muir, who's the head of Washington Headquarters Services, the senior, allegedly senior career official in the Pentagon, but hasn't been through a transition before. And the new chief of staff for the Secretary of Defense just got there a couple of weeks ago. So they're going to focus on the practical realities of what needs to get done. For example, if they want to accelerate the Defense Production Act, as President-elect Biden has suggested, to basically ramp up support for COVID, for testing, for personal protection equipment, they're going to need to be talking to Ellen Ward and Kim Harrington and the people that have been working the problem with industry to find out what's worked, what hasn't worked. And these are people that are going to want to be very helpful to the new team to keep things going. You're going to want to talk to somebody like Ken Rapuano, the Assistant Secretary for Homeland, who's had to deal with fires and hurricanes and is very involved in the COVID ramp up. You're going to want to find out, you know, the practical realities of the budget from maybe the Chief Operating Officer of the Pentagon, David Norquist, who frankly, if history is any indication, they ought to seriously consider having him stay on for parts of the transition, like happened when Rumsfeld took over and kept Rudy De Leon as the deputy, when Mattis took over and kept Bob Work. You need, this place is the largest, most complex outfit in the world, hundreds of thousands of people deployed overseas, and you're going to need some continuity. A lot of the more recently appointed political appointees just don't have the depth of experience to be that helpful, being candid about it. So the practical reality, as Michael said, also is they've got to get staffed up to get their top people through the confirmation process as rapidly as possible. We certainly don't want to replicate the record of the Trump administration that took almost a year to get all their top people on board in the Pentagon. Even the Obama administration, it took them 4 months to get the first top people in. It took about 7 months to get the rest in. So that whole process needs to be accelerated, and that's going to require some cooperations from the U.S. Senate.
I think Arnold also raises a really critical point here, which is typically new incoming administrations focus on the top 13 jobs, which are the traditional hierarchy of the department. But what Arnold's pointed out is this administration already is facing a set of crises that requires their people in key jobs that are below those 13 top jobs. So the transition team has to think about how they staff to the problem rather than staff to the hierarchy. Over.
From that standpoint, right, that's you guys both have discussed the fact that they're sort of four deep in talent on a lot of these jobs, moving all the way down, whether it's to Pentagon industrial policy, acquisition and sustainment, R&E, right? I mean, policy, obviously, Kath is seen as a leading contender to be the undersecretary for policy, a position for which she's enormously qualified, like a lot of these folks. And to your confirmation point, Arnold, as you've always told me, the easiest way through confirmation is make sure that you've got guys qualified enough to be confirmed. And I think in this case, that shouldn't be a question, although obviously partisanship will play a role in this at the end of the day. Normally, defense is seen as one of the most important picks a president makes. I think in this case, the team Biden was messaging that, you know, diplomacy is prime, intelligence is important. We're welcoming to immigrants, and America has a very diverse face to present to the United Nations, which another is, you know, underscores the multilateral elements of this. For some, it's, wow, the defense secretary wasn't named. Wow, you know, Michelle Flournoy wasn't named, and you know, what does that signal? From your guys' standpoint, does it signal anything? Especially if the Biden team is sort of packaging, this is block one of people, here's block two of people, when it comes to the top team.
Well, Vago, let me talk about the timing without getting into personalities first. And so, traditionally, if you look back at history in terms of when a change of administration is a change of the party in power, The Secretary of Defense nomination really has not been named until the December timeframe. For example, Secretary Rumsfeld wasn't named till December 28th. Secretary Mattis was named like the first week in December. Most of the rest of them came, you know, a little bit later. So we're not out of sync at all with history. And the main thing is to have the individual that is named with an agreement with the Senate Armed Services Committee that they'll conduct the confirmation hearing in January so that the president can nominate that person officially on January 20th and they confirm that person that afternoon, as they did with Secretary Weinberger under Reagan, as they did with Rumsfeld under Bush, as they did with Mattis under Trump. The history is there to get that SecDef on board right away, the same day that the president is inaugurated and sworn in. And so I don't think in terms of that time frame, there should be any concern. And I fully expect the Biden team is extremely savvy on these matters. And I would expect that they're going to understand the timelines and will make sure that that SecDef nominee is ready to roll so that person can basically start the afternoon of January 20th. Over.
So Vago, I think Arnold points out very clearly that in the scheme of building an administration, the sequencing doesn't matter much. But there is the messaging of that new administration and priorities to allies and partners. There it matters a lot. And the shift from the tweet storms from the previous president to the likely subtleties of the way President-elect Biden will operate will require some signaling to make that clear. But embedded in all of this is another thing, that is standing up the new administration. What we have seen time and time again is that once confirmed, the secretary moves into the department essentially home alone. And the way they deal with that historically is to pick people from the agency review teams and have some of them supplement the secretary's office while they are short-staffed and building those for that 2 or 3 months going forward. So this process is of transition really takes months to accomplish. And it requires both strategic patience on the part of our allies and partners, and frankly, tactical patience for those in the building and on the Hill. Over.
Is this, as some people are suggesting, a self-inflicted wound by the part of the new team, right? That you've got a qualified candidate that's likely to be your candidate. Why didn't you just name it and form it as part of that top block? Or is it overwrought to say that, okay, it's 1 week after?
Vago, I don't believe it matters one iota. I think this is a tempest in a teapot. As Arnold points out, this is the norm in which these transitions have occurred. Nothing in terms of timing of the Secretary of Defense selection, nothing is out of the normal right here. And this team has some people who are particularly good at signaling. And I am confident they will do that.
Let me ask you you both this question. Whenever you've got a situation where you have, as we've discussed, four deep on top talent, or, you know, in some cases, a lot deeper than four deep, folks raised money, folks gave their time, their effort in order to get a candidate elected. So that gives you a certain number of points that go beyond what your capability and capacity you're bringing for the job is. And every once in a while, folks get hurt or they try to reach too far for a job and don't get any job at the end of the day. What's the key to making sure that these transitions don't end up engendering any form of bad blood at the end of the day, right? Is there an approach you guys have seen that results in a smooth team coming out of the blocks at the end of the day?
So Vago, I think this is, one is this team coming in has a real sense of history and they understand these appointments are not life peerages. They also will understand and know that most people in these appointments last at best 2 years. And they have ambitions for an 8-year presidency of the Biden-Harris team. That would say, if history is any goal, is any guide, there could be as many as 4 confirmed secretaries of defense during that time. And that rollover rate is pretty constant throughout the entire team. So with the 60 jobs that are Senate confirmed, underneath are hundreds of non-confirmed secretarial appointments, deputy assistant secretaries. Understanding the building up a mental plan for people around an 8-year span provides comfort to those who don't get in on the first tranche, but most importantly, keeps the team focused on building the bench so that when the players, when the team switches out, as it begins inevitably to do at year 3 and at year 5 and at year 7, that they've got a ready bench. So I think this is all about the philosophy of governance over the long term, a strategic philosophy, vice a tactical philosophy.
But Vago, I don't think the measure of merit for this team is going to be fundraising prowess or friendships. It's going to be, do we have and will we have, and I'm sure they will, the people with the capabilities and experience to change the output performance of the Department of Defense so that we are better, faster, cheaper than China, and that we're able to deal with great power competition in a physically constrained environment. That's what's really going to count. They're going to have to focus on making sure that the people they nominate and the people they bring in as political appointees that don't require Senate confirmation are focused on the right goals, not focused on how much money did they raise, not focused on hurt feelings and things of that nature. And I don't really think those are going to be considerations for this team of highly experienced national security experts. Over.
Let me ask very briefly, we're running short on time, but get your sense on that, because Arnold, we have spoken about this many times before. This team, or some of the members of this team, were in the Obama administration when the decision was made around 14 that we have to make some major muscle movements. And then the Defense Reform Initiative and the studying and the war gaming that Bob Work as deputy secretary unveiled, the really unvarnished war gaming that began, was all to sort of shape tough choices. There was a sense that Hillary Clinton was going to win in 16, and that by 18, we would be executing these big lifts, these tough choices. Instead, Donald Trump was elected. There was more money. There was some night courting, but not necessarily big muscle movements. That was left, curiously enough, to as a 21 event, right, where this administration has been talking about a bigger Navy. What's the right mindset to have for a team coming in that will be the team that is going to have to make decisions that some argue are already many years overdue in terms of major muscle movement changes? What's the approach they need, the head they've got to have on when they come in? Given the magnitude of this task.
Yeah, think smarter, not richer. I mean, we're in a fiscally constrained environment. The outgoing administration has talked about a flat budget. We know that the senior leaders have said we need 3-5% real growth to implement the national security strategy of great power competition. We're not going to see that level of resources made available. The deficit hawks are rearing their heads. So they're going to have to think smarter, not richer. And they're going to have to focus on what are the priority programs that we need to basically ensure that we're capable of deterring and defending against the great powers, particularly China. So again, think smarter, not richer, and they're going to have to get more bang for the buck for the dollars we spend. We are spending more money than we spent in the peak of the Reagan buildup, and yet the force is 50% smaller. So we just can't continue on this path and be able to be successful against China. Over.
Michael?
Yeah, and Vago, let me just cap on that excellent observations. These problems they face get worse with time. They have to attend to these on the front end. So with an 8-year perspective, you have to think about how these first 21 months between inauguration and the midterm election are crucial to the success of the legacy they leave the country at the end of 4 or 8 years.
Let me ask one last question, Michael, given that I know that you've focused on it, Arnold, if you want to pitch in as well. Is there what they're going to have to do, though, to achieve, Arnold, what you said, is disappoint a lot of people, right? Legacy programs, are likely not going to be, or legacy might not be the right answer, right? But there are some things that we're doing and programs we're buying that will have to be stopped. And that is a very, very hard thing to do in Washington. Members of Congress get engaged, companies get engaged. And at the end of the day, it's possible Barack Obama and Bob Gates did it in getting, you know, killing F-22 and airborne laser and future combat systems and the like. But it took a president being focused, and the axe fell in the first couple of months to do it. What's the right mindset? Right. What is the right? Is this all constituency building that even starts right now?
Well, Vago, this is the hard work of government, and it's particularly difficult for the Biden administration, because there was no national mandate or consensus established around national security in the campaign. So the people they pick have not only to know a lot about the policies, the building, the culture, et cetera, but they also have to have, as Arnold said, the capacity to deliver outcomes. Those outcomes mean uniting all the instruments of political administration and personal conviction power towards getting a consensus around what needs to happen. That puts a very specific spin on the kind of people and the qualifications you put in those jobs. And it's also going to require all of them to work to a concerted, focused delivery of the objectives of the president. You can't have the Navy Secretary doing one thing, the Army Secretary doing another, and the Air Force Secretary doing a third. Those all have to be united and focused on the president's priorities and get building this consensus around what's the state of affairs and what does the department have to do in order for the nation to thrive and prosper in that future.
Vago, they're going to have to rebuild the traditional relationship with Congress that has been fundamentally broken by the Trump administration's unilateral decisions related to the border wall, the use of defense money, the disdain for congressional prerogatives. And because Congress still retains the power of the purse, Congress still has the Article I responsibilities to raise armies, maintain navies, and provide the rules and governance thereof. They're going to have to be a partner. And you know, they're going to have to come up with a bipartisan approach, because you may have a Republican Senate and a Democratic House. However, defense has thrived in divided government in years past and can so again. But they're going to have a different relationship than has existed for the last 4 years to be successful.
Spoken like a true authorizer, Arnold. Gentlemen, thanks very, very much. Really appreciate it. Happy Thanksgiving to both you and yours for a healthy holiday. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Vago.
Very quick programming note for everybody. Because of Thanksgiving, we're taking the day off, and we wish all of you a very, very happy Thanksgiving. But we're going to have programming on Friday, and the Business Roundtable will be back as it always is on Sunday.
And now a word from our sponsor, retired United States Army Major General Jeff Schlosser, who is the Executive Vice President for Strategic Pursuits at Bell.
We've been building creative and innovative aircraft, next generation types of capabilities for almost 9 decades. Bell is the company that can deliver that.
Thanks very much, sir. And thanks to all of you for listening. Please follow our daily podcasts and visit the Defense and Aerospace Report website to subscribe to our weekly newsletter. Follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook at Defense and Aerospace Report, and check us out on LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our weekly cyber report sponsored by Northrop Grumman. Thanks again to Bell for their generous sponsorship, and we'll see you again tomorrow.